As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Welcome to this episode of Becoming an Elite Financial Advisor. Today, we're going to be hanging out with Duncan. Duncan is the creator of the Pareto System. He's been in the business for over 30 years, working with advisors at all stages of their career, and now specializing in working with growing teams, complex systems. So I'm looking forward to talking in depth about how advisors progress through the career. How do you deal with head trash as you go? And what are the common themes that the successful advisors almost always have? And then how can you self-assess to say, which of these things do I need to focus on and improve the most? Duncan, thanks for being here.
Stan, thanks.
I enjoyed our recording on your podcast we did recently. Time flew by on that one. That was fun.
Yeah, it was good. We covered a lot of ground.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm sure a lot of people are listening, have heard of your stuff, have run into your teachings, but for those that have not, if you can give us your background and your system, kind of what brought you to where you are now, because you've been doing this for 30 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic 30-year overnight success story. I eased into this business accidentally. I had some friends that were in the financial services business. And in my previous business, I had clients that were financial advisors. And I had a friend who said to me, hey, look, if you want to make any real money, get into the business of money, because that's where it all is. I thought that's pretty profound. And what I realized is that the enlightened financial advisor was not just focused on their technical ability, their core competency as an asset manager. They also realized that they were managing a business and they were managing people. And they placed as much importance on practice management and relationship management as they did on wealth management. And so that became my niche, providing best practices and insights that were proven and actionable. And, you know, lo and behold, it caught on.
I thought all financial advisors kind of had it all figured out. So I guess there's enough of us that need help that keep you busy.
Well, in actuality, and this is the irony, is that the people who like what you and I do the most actually need it the least. Right? There's nothing wrong. There's nothing broken, but they're so fixated on plateau avoidance and professional contrast, right? So becoming the best version of themselves and putting distance between themselves and the pack, that they keep working on their business and working on themselves. And again, the incrementalism of that mindset starts to compound over time.
How do you handle the your level of patience with advisors? Because there's sometimes I'm with them, and maybe it's because I see myself in them when I was a young advisor, of like, they're not seeing it and you want to shake them. And you're like, if you would just listen. And to your point, the studs that are successful are just getting more successful because they keep doing the right things. But there's a big chunk that maybe aren't open to new ideas, think what they're doing is the best thing. How do you tolerate that these days?
Well, first of all, I'm at peace with somebody else's sense of urgency. I mean, I've accepted the fact that I can't want it more than they do. And the Confucius mentality is that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So fortunately, our fit process, we don't work with somebody just because they can afford to pay us. We want to make sure that their mindset is aligned and in sync with ours. And we future pace and set expectations that align with theirs. And then we're very patient. We're not trying to, you know, hit grand slams. It's a lot of singles and doubles. And that, again, compounds. But again, I'm at peace with the pace.
Love that. Yeah. I think about the guys I play golf with that just hit it, you know, 50 yards shorter, but straight. And they seem to have a much better day on the course than I do sometimes.
Well, they've got all the shots, right? It's not just the awe of, you know, the bomb off the tee box. I mean, they've got every shot, and it's very subtle.
Yeah. So as your system's progressed over time, you've written books. And I know in my experience of being in this coaching game, it's like I'm saying something, and then eventually it turns into where it's like, hey, I'm saying the same thing a lot. Like, I'm probably put a framework around that. You're so far ahead of me in that. I'm sure there's times where you're like, hey, this sounds like a good idea, but it didn't really flush out to be a system. But now you have systems and you have books. What would you say through all of that? Like, this is my superpower now. This is the thing I do best.
Well, first of all, I mean, these are city miles, right? I've been at this a long time. You are much further ahead at your stage in life than I was. The one thing I did figure out is that crowdsourcing is very, very effective, where I'm not trying to be the innovator. There's a dynamic stand in the world of coaching of what I would call co-opetition, where if I just have a lot of conversations with thought leaders like you and with clients, I can assimilate and bring a lot of this stuff together. And a lot of people give me credit. They say, oh, wow, you're so creative. For me, creativity is just my ability to conceal my sources.
Strong.
So if you give me a good idea and I go, hey, that's a good idea, the first time I talk about it, I'll say it's like Sten said. The second time, it's like somebody said. Third time, it's like I've always...
I think I said that.
Like I just take it on.
I love that. That's great. And I heard somebody tell me once, they said, hey, at any point in time, you can just call something and it becomes yours. Just come up with a neat name and call it a thing. And it's like, oh, you're actually all allowed to do that.
And so the message needs an identity, but the messenger needs conviction. And people feed off that conviction. So yeah, you got to sit up straight and have really good solid tone. And yeah, it's real.
Yep. So when you got into the business, the advisory coaching business, working with entrepreneurs, helping them with their practice systems, did you say, I'll work with anybody? And then over time, I know now you're working with pretty established teams, large teams. And is that kind of your sweet spot now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a financial advisor in the early days. I mean, can the client fog a mirror? Do they have a pulse? I mean, I'll work with anybody. Just give me a shot.
Yep.
And then you get some momentum and then you realize, look, I've got 24 hours in the day, and you make the shift from being all things to all people to all things to some people. And the beauty is you get to grow up market and sometimes even grow down the number of relationships you're managing so that you can, you know, work with clients where you're managing more complex needs. So that's the key about being disciplined, being patient, and letting things compound. Disciplines compound. It's, you know, the rule of 72 does not just apply to money. Okay. Disciplines compound. Neglect compounds. And the irony is, neglect compounds faster. You know, so it's like going to the gym. I mean, you know, you go to the gym for 3 weeks, that can all be undone by 1 week of neglect, right? So if you play the long game, you stay true to the compounding nature of your value, you make tweaks and adjustments, it enables you to grow up market. So that's what's happened with us, where we created a one-to-many deliverable for advisory teams that weren't as complex, so they could still buy into our philosophy and approach, and then a one-to-one deliverable for the advisors who were a little further down the track.
Nice. Okay. Good. Well, I know conversations we've had in the past, and I resonate with this. I've broken into different seasons, but I do think there's these kind of life cycles of advisors. And I don't know if you're really able to skip them, but I think you can maybe accelerate your way through them. So I've heard you use words viable, sustainable, breakthrough. Would you kind of walk us through that rhythm or those seasons?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. And I think there's a nice sweet spot there between the why and the how. The why is the philosophy, the strategy, the way, you know, the vision. That's the mindset. That's very, very key. And, you know, so first of all, you know, I would say that the most important philosophical aspect of the enlightened advisor is that it's stewardship, not salesmanship. So you're not asking a client to buy something, you're asking them to buy into something,
mm-hmm.
buy into a process, buy into a meaningful long-term relationship, and buy into a client experience, not buying products. Okay, so if you think about that by virtue of contrast, the transactional advisor who's pumping up the leaky tire, putting sand in a shopping cart, they're gauged on products, pricing, and performance.
Mm.
Okay, and that's, they're going to be commoditized out, right? And then on the other side, you ask a client to buy into a meaningful relationship with good people, a solid practice, and a panoramic and all-encompassing process. That in and of itself will give you professional contrast. Okay, so that's the why. The how is just the roadmap and the ability to delay gratification. It doesn't happen overnight. And just having a real disciplined approach to letting this thing build and adopting best practices and, you know, running a business like a business. Like this advisor over here has a book of business. That's over. Mm. Having yeah. an actual business and running it like a business, that's what's separating the best from the rest. So on one side, stand long-winded answer, but you've got advisors who are coasting, minimal adaptation. They're on a collision course with a plateau or obsolescence.
Mm-hmm.
You have advisors who are cresting, which means they're still growing, but they haven't gotten out in front of their capacity issues, which is why we have advisors who are growing down. I mean, I've had advisors, Sten, who come to us with 400 clients, making a lot of money, and they're miserable because they have no personal life. There's stuff going on at home that's not ideal. And we tell them, look, you've got to right size. You've got to disassociate. It's costing you more than it's getting you. And yeah. and that mindset creates liberation and order, and how to deploy that is very key. So coasting, cresting, climbing, the ones who are climbing, adopt best practices, proven strategies, they delay gratification, they future pace, which means clients, team members, they're bought into the vision, they're bought into where this is all going. Again, that's kind of a bit of a word salad there, but
that's great.
That's the distinction, I think.
Yeah, one thing that popped in my mind as you were saying that is I was talking to a buddy, Paul Blanco, runs one of the largest mass mutual offices in the country.
Yeah.
Great entrepreneur, business owner. And I was talking to him, and I was at a time I was frustrated. I was like, do some people just have it and some people don't? And he's like, in my experience, because he's recruited maybe thousands of advisors at this point, he's like, there's probably about 10% that don't. Like, no matter what you do, you probably won't get them to grow. He's like, there's maybe 10% that just got it. Like, you just have to fan the flame a little bit and they're going to run. He says most can have it if they have the right guidance to get there.
Yeah.
How would you adjust those numbers?
Okay, so let's apply that to athletics and then apply it to business. So you're right. There are some what we would call born leaders. So, you know, every field of endeavor in athletics, you see the natural born leaders, the ones who emerge and you can just tell they've got it.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have a bit of a mindset that only the paranoid survive.
Mm.
If they don't believe their own hype. They're getting told all the time, I mean, you're awesome, you're incredible, you're a natural. They don't believe it. So they work harder on themselves than on anything else. Like the best athletes, they outwork everybody. They have more coaches. They're there first, they leave last. And so that part is learned. Okay, there's an autodidactic element to leadership and productivity. And the amazing thing is with AI, you don't have to reinvent any wheel. Mm-hmm. And you can greatly accelerate putting yourself in every red zone. Like you can go on to AI right now and say, okay, give me, if you just gave it this prompt and say, I am a financial advisor. I lead a team of three. I want to 10X my business in the next 5 years. Give me the qualities of leadership I need. And wait 3 seconds and you'll have the 12 leadership qualities. And then you can self-assess. Okay, I'm good here. I've got gaps here. And then just that becomes your beacon. Just move in that direction. It's all learned skills. There's no secret. But it's just easier not to do. I mean, it's easy to do that, but it's easier not to. So there's a born element, but then there's a, okay, I'm not believing it, and I'm going to just keep pouring it on.
Yeah.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
In your experience, when you start working with clients, do you see that most of them have the potential to do what you're trying to get them to do? Or are there times where you're like, they may not get where I hope they would? Now my shift is getting them to kind of their full potential and then contentment? Or is it this constant drive all the time? What's the...
Okay, so that's again, another enlightened question. And, you know, the irony is that I don't want people to work harder necessarily. Because balance, there's a sweet spot there. I was very fortunate back a long time ago. I had a mentor who said to me, it's not how much you make. It's not how much you're worth that makes you valuable. It's who you become that makes you valuable. And so the business is supposed to serve your life, not the other way around. So the KPI for me is, does the business serve your life? Like, do you have goals and aspirations and things that you're trying to accomplish in your life? The business is a means to those ends. Are you in that sweet spot? And if somebody can say yes, or they're moving in that direction, there's a bit of a self-fulfilling element to that where they are more productive. Yeah. There's diminishing returns and anti-climax to being that sort of one-dimensional, I'm going to crush it, be President's Club every year. And meanwhile, there's this all this collateral damage and this wake of behind them of unfulfillment. You know, so I want people to be in that sweet spot and things kind of fall into place.
One thing I had to fight, I think there were things that people said to me like that when I was in my 20s that I just didn't understand or hear. But one thing I had to recognize, because I felt like, well, if I adhere to something like that, that means I lose my edge. Like I'm not going to reach my, I'm giving up on my potential as an advisor. And through some repetition, I realized, well, I can still take my kids to school. I can still be home for dinner. It just means when I'm working, I have to be way more effective if I still want to reach these other heights. Like I had to come to the point where it's like, I don't think I have to sacrifice big impact and helping clients and making money. I do agree there's a trade-off at some point. How would you coach somebody up if they're like, Sten, Duncan, I'm not going to shoot for that goal because in order to get there, I would have to stop doing things I want. So I'm just going to hang out. Because I think there's some head trash there too.
Yeah, I agree. And that's actually very well said. And, you know, it's like, again, that mindset, you can have it all, just not all at once. Just make sure that your pursuits aren't costing you more than they're getting you. And don't trivialize some of the stuff that, you know, the accolades aren't as dramatic because time, I mean, Sten, I still remember Y2K, you know, 25 years ago, and it's like a blink. And I think the next 25 are going to go by even faster. So, but to your point, to get granular on that, if you really do buy into compounding and disciplines and incrementalism, so I ask advisors all the time, okay, so let's do a time audit. Let's do a week in the life. How do you expend your time? So a typical advisor will work 45 hours a week, let's just say. And let's break it down. 15 hours managing money, 15 hours managing their business, 15 hours managing their clients. And I say to them, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But let's look at how that compounds out 12 months. And I say, okay, two of those three expenditures of effort are proprietary. One is commoditized. I'll never trivialize how somebody manages money, but that in and of itself does not give you professional contrast. So I have advisors now, Sten, who are for all intents and purposes getting out of the asset management business. And by that, I mean, they're outsourcing, automating, allocating, taking that first 15 down to five, taking the 10 and plowing it into their business, plowing it into the client experience, plowing it into their proprietary process, and letting that compound. And that starts to really blossom. And the other thing is, if you think about blind spots in that have emerged in the last 5 years, advisors who are opening their eyes to the reality of alternative investments and reading the room, when clients start asking about things like gold and blockchain and, you know, my buddy's doing a residential development, and reading that room in terms of, okay, the writing's on the wall there. I've got to expand my thinking around my process. It can't just necessarily be traditional markets. I have to build a panoramic approach that takes into consideration things that have emerged in the last 5 years. So again, bit of a mindset, but how they expend or invest time, and then the compounding effect of that, that's pretty profound.
Yeah. What have you found is like the biggest or hardest obstacle or breakthrough in an advisor's career? Is it once they, I see a lot of advisors get stuck when they finally are just making enough money to be comfortable. And they're like, wow, I pay my bills. I got some extra money. And it's like, they almost need some type of catalyst or something to push them to say, but I can run a better business. Like, I don't have to work more, but I could be more effective. But I mean, do you see a lot of them getting stuck at that? You know, I'm making $300,000-$400,000 a year, and like, this is great.
Well, there's a temet nosce to that, right? Know thyself. And so part of our fit process before we engage with an advisor and their team is we want to know how they're wired and where they are on the spectrum between contentment and ambition. Okay, so if you think of the seven habits, one of the habits being begin with the end in mind, we say to them, okay, describe nirvana for us. Like, what does it look like? The next 5, 10, 15 years, what does that look like for you? And the progression is four stages, okay? There's growing, just pure organic growth. And then there's teaming. That's where they start to add bench strength and really start to build out and create a bit of leverage and scale. And then there's pure scaling based on demography, the ability to attract other advisors to adopt and draft in behind your process, right? And then there's exiting and maximizing the value of your life's work, the exit strategy and end game. When you begin with the end of mind, it's okay, what is my ambition? What is my appetite for that? When somebody will actually define that, now we can say, okay, let's just be at peace with how that all plays out. And the beauty is people change, people evolve, and people might limit themselves and say, okay, I'll be content with $300,000 or $400,000. And then they get there and realize, okay, $0 to $400,000 is hard. $400,000 to $1,000,000 is actually less hard. Yeah. Because now I've got momentum. Maybe I should level up a little bit. So we just sort of let that play out. But that exercise of know thyself, where am I? Where am I going? What does that look like? Count the costs.
Yeah.
It's a good exercise.
Yeah, I really appreciate the part of your process where you are kind of vetting people before you work with them. I think I've gotten better in my practice on doing that. But as I hang out and try to coach advisors, I think there's still part of me that's like, you don't know it yet, but like, I think I can help you get there. And I deal with some frustration when I'm just like, it's there for the taking. You just have to apply yourself. And there's kind of this stuck mentality.
Yeah.
How often are you interacting with somebody and you have to, from your experience, just step aside and say, hey, here's some content. Here's some good stuff for you. But you don't have that, the ambition part you're talking about.
Well, first of all, in any, especially in the fee for service, knowledge for profit space, which we're in, financial advisors in, I always say to our clients, and I'm listening as I say it, I say the relationship's going to last long after you spend the money.
Mm.
You know, so it's not a transaction. It's not a one-off. It's directional. And also, there's the law of environment. Like, there's a wide array of immutable laws and principles that affect us all. The law of environment says we are products of our environment. So it's not just the monetary value of the relationship. What are we going to get out of this relationship? Is this going to make more of me? Am I going to become products of that environment? There are some people that have the money, but attitudinally, Gandhi said it best. He said, never wrestle with a pig. You both get dirty, but the pig likes it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't ever want to be part of that environment. So everybody in life stands either a fountain or a drain, right?
Yeah.
I just want to work with fountains who are trying to create something, build something, and they have immense gratitude for what they have. And they never take that for granted, but they also have aspirations for what they hope to achieve. That's pretty good balance when you have both of those.
I'm going to write a book called Duncanisms. You're dropping some great wisdom here.
Thanks.
Awesome. All right. As we wrap up, what would you kind of leave all the advisors listening with? Obviously, go check out Pareto System. Books are great. But if they weren't ever able to hang out with you one-on-one, what would you want to tell them?
Well, I'd love to see you on LinkedIn. I'm very active there. So just look for me, Duncan McPherson. I should pop right up. We have an app, Pareto Systems, always on. Put that in your iPhone or your Android and stay connected and tethered with us. I would ask you to be a serious student of all things AI. Okay. The words game changer get thrown around a lot. In my 30 years in this space, I have never seen anything with the velocity and impact of AI. Nothing. It is profound. And first of all, AI is not going to replace the enlightened advisor. It's going to liberate them. Because the one thing AI will never have in the purest form is EI, the emotional intelligence. It will liberate you to go deeper into what makes you fee worthy. And that's managing relationships and creating a client experience. But I'll tell you, in terms of building out your client experience, building out your process and all things related to intellectual property, Chris Jepson and I wrote a 51-page white paper called AI for the Financial Professional. I'd probably encourage advisors, your community, to maybe ask for that. It's gone through compliance. It's proven. It's not esoteric or, bizarro AI stuff. It's all real world and it works. So, I look at, from a pattern recognition perspective, the best people, the clay is soft. Like, they don't believe their own hype. They don't think they have all the answers. They keep tinkering, refining, and optimizing, and they're innovative. The adoption curve, it's not too late to be an early adopter of all things AI, and it can have a profound impact on your business and on your life.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to read it. All right, my friend, it was good seeing you again. We'll talk soon.
Good job, man. Thank you.
See you, bud.